All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the fall installment of the Women's Shiurim Sunday morning. It's fine. No, not at all. So I was thinking about what to devote the series of Shiurim to during these upcoming weeks. After some going back and forth, I thought it would be worthwhile to focus on something that we're all at least somewhat familiar with, but hopefully can gain a greater degree of familiarity with, referring to Pirkei Avos, which on one level, it's the wrong time of year. Pirkei Avos is typically a Pesach through Rosh Hashanah limud. But on the other hand, it's never the wrong time of year for Pirkei Avos. The lessons of Pirkei Avos are always relevant, and we have there's a certain advantage in doing it this time of year because we're not bound to feel that we have to learn it quickly to be able to, you know, to stick to the perek that's being learned that particular week. We can take our time. We can go slowly and go through at whatever we think is an appropriate pace the various different teachings that Pirkei Avos has to share with us. It's also something that's in the Siddur. It's something that's very accessible. Everyone can easily see the Pirkei Avos. I brought some Siddurim here. We can pass them around. Certainly easy enough to be able to follow. So Pirkei Avos is in the Article Siddur on page 544. Much of what we're going to do today is more by way of introduction than reading inside, but again, it always feels a little good to have the Sefer open, even if a lot of what we talk about today is outside of the Sefer itself. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Bava Kama, Daf Lamed, that Hayman Deboi Lamehavi Chasida, if a person wants to establish himself as a pious person, a person wants to be a person who can be described as a chassid, not necessarily a chassid with a tzaddik, but just a chassid with who's a pious person. Right. Right. So a person wants to be a chassid, l'kayim milei de'avos, let him fulfill the various ideas which are presented in Pirkei Avos. So with that in mind, we should understand that the original Musar Sefer, in many ways, the original book of telling us how to improve our character and how to make ourselves into Hasidim in the fullest sense of the term, people who are pious people, people who strive to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam, this is the Sefer that Chazal gave us to enable us to do exactly that. Why is the Sefer called Avos? Avos means the fathers. So what's that got to do with this particular Sefer? The Meiri writes that the Sefer, the Meiri, Rav Menachem Meiri, was one of the medieval authorities, the Rishonim, who lived in Provence in southern France, and he wrote a commentary on the Shas. So the Meiri writes that the Masechta is called Avos because Avos, in addition to meaning fathers, also means general principles, foundational principles. Right. So we talk about in Hilchos Shabbos, there are 39 avos malachos, there are 39 basic principles of prohibited labors. When it comes to the laws of nezikin, of causing damage to somebody else, there are arba avos nezikin, there are four, and maybe even more, different categories, fundamental categories of how to cause damage to somebody else. And the Meiri writes that that's really the sense in which, Pirkei Avos is called Avos as well. Avos doesn't really translate, according to the Meiri, as fathers. It's not chapters of the fathers, as it's often translated. But in other words, the Meiri would translate Pirkei Avos as chapters that talk about fundamentals. That's the word Avos, according to the Meiri. In his words, they are Yesod v'shoresh l'chol chochma u'mitzvah. The ideas that are presented in Pirkei Avos are a foundation and a root for every aspect of wisdom and every mitzvah. In other words, these are foundational ideas. These are Avos. These are basic pillars of what it means to be a good Jew. Additionally, another interpretation, which we'll come back to and elaborate on a little bit more at length, is that this is a portion of Shas that teaches us about the Avos, those Tanaim, those holy sages of the Mishnah, whose words are recorded in Pirkei Avos, and as much as what they have to say is fundamental, learning about the people themselves, the fathers, the forefathers of the Jewish nation, and there's these Tanoim who were such pivotal figures in being able to give over Torah, that's also foundational, that's also fundamental in giving over these ideas. A common idea which we're going to see today, and we're going to try to elaborate on it, is that Pirkei Avos is not just about wise sayings, but it's about the wise people who taught us these wise sayings, and we can learn as much from their personal example as we can from the words and the nice sayings that they happen to say. So that's the theme we're going to come back to a little bit later on today. And I think in light of that, it's very appropriate that the Sefer is called Pirkei Avos, because Avos has that double meaning. It refers to the teachings that they taught, the fundamental teachings, but it also refers to the forefathers themselves, the individuals who taught us these fundamental ideas. Okay. So let's take a look at a passage which is an introductory passage to Pirkei Avos on page 544. It's customary for hundreds of years that before reciting one of the prokim, one of the chapters of Pirkei Avos, we introduce it with the following statement. Right on the top of page 544, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek la'olam haba. Every Jew, all of Israel, has a portion in the world to come. Shene'emar, as it says, the pasuk in Yeshaya, ve'amech kulam tzadikim, your nation is all righteous people. La'olam yirshu aretz, they will inherit the land forever. Netzer matoai ma'aseh yodai lehispo'er, they are the branch of my planting, my handiwork in which to take pride. What is this passage, and why do we say it at the beginning of every chapter of Pirkei Avos? So interestingly enough, this is actually also a Mishnah. You know, all of Pirkei Avos is Mishnayos. It's one of the Masechtas of Shas Mishnayos. This is also a Mishnah that begins Kol Yisrael. It's a Mishnah that's found towards the end of Masechta Sanhedrin. And the context in which this Mishnah is stated is actually an interesting one. The Mishnayos for several chapters have talked about criminals who are executed by the Beis Din. There are a whole series of chapters in Masechta Sanhedrin that talk about different criminals and how they're executed and the different ways in which they're executed. And chapter after chapter talks about people who are stoned to death, people who are strangled to death, people who are decapitated, all kinds of fun stuff. So after talking about all of that, comes the Mishnah and says, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek la'olam haba. Every Jew has a portion in the world to come. And explain the Mefarshim in context. What that means is that you would think that somebody who's such a criminal that they were actually executed by the Beis Din. Remember, you know, in Halacha, it's you have to try really hard to get executed by the Beis Din. You know, you have to have two witnesses who witness you about to do the act. And when you're just about to pull the trigger, they have to come over to you and say, wait a minute. You realize, of course, that if you kill that person, you're going to be subject to capital punishment by the Beis Din. And you have to say, yes, I'm aware of that, but nonetheless, I still want to murder this other person. Right? Again, a scenario which is very, very difficult to imagine took place with any degree of frequency. Right? So somebody was such a hardened criminal that they were put to death, meeting all those criteria for the Beis Din. Nonetheless, says the Mishnah, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek la'olam haba, even these people, even these convicts, even these criminals who were executed, even they have a portion in the world to come. Every Jew has a portion in olam haba. What's the pasuk in Yeshaya which is quoted over here? V'amech kulam tzadikim la'olam yirshu aretz. The way the Mishnah is interpreting the pasuk is that your nation is all tzaddikim, and they will inherit the land which is forever. What is the land which is forever? What is the land which is eternal? No land over here is eternal. I mean, everything in this world is transitory, it ultimately passes. The land which is eternal is Olam Haba, you know, is the ultimate existence of the world to come. So explain the Mefarshim, the Pasuk in Yeshaya must be talking about Olam Haba as opposed to Olam Hazeh, as opposed to this world. Just consider the following. The Amech Kulam Tzadikim, your nation is composed entirely of Tzadikim. I mean, that, right, okay, that would be very nice if it were true. The Amech Kulam Tzadikim, okay, it's a very rose-colored view of reality, but it doesn't always seem to be 100% true. In what sense can we say that all of Klal Yisrael are Tzadikim? Certainly not in this world. But in the next world, everybody's a tzaddik to the extent that they have at least something in Olam Haba. Right? Everybody has at least something in Olam Haba. So if everybody has at least something in Olam Haba, why try to do anything? Why not just sit back in this world and rely on the little, on the portion in Olam Haba that every Jew is promised simply by virtue of being a Jew? So they said, they asked this question to the Chofetz Chaim, and the Chofetz Chaim responded with the following story. He said, in Europe, there was a Jew who was wealthy and he owned multiple businesses and factories. And because this Jew was a Baal Chesed, he employed, quote-unquote, certain people in the factories who didn't really have jobs. You know, in other words, he gave them a salary. And basically the salary, the job consisted of, you know, sit over here from 9 to 5, and, you know, he will give you a salary. It was a chesed. So one day they did an audit of the businesses and the factories, and the auditors were going around from place to place and asking every single individual, what's your job? So, you know, this one explained, my job is to do this, to run this part. They finally came to one of the guys who was one of the chesed cases, and they asked him, so what's your job? And the guy hemmed and hawed for a couple of minutes, and in the end of the day he said, my job is, I make a salary. That's my job. And everybody who understood what that meant, you know, had a good laugh, unfortunately, at his expense. Said the Chofetz Chaim, yes, everybody has a portion in Olam Haba, but you don't want to be that chesed case who has a portion in Olam Haba where when they ask you, what do you do up here in Olam Haba, you say, my job is to take a salary. You know, you want to be able to deserve, at least on some level, you know, that portion in Olam Haba. Why do we take a Mishnah from the beginning? Why do we take a Mishnah from a different Masechta in Shas, from Sanhedrin, that's talking about how every Jew has a portion in Olam Haba? And why do we stick it at the beginning of each of the chapters of Pirkei Avos? Why borrow a Mishnah from here and stick it over there? So there are numerous explanations that are given for this idea. Many of them, I think, come back to an idea which is expressed already early on by the Machzer Vitri. The Machzer Vitri is a siddur that was written by Rav Simcha of Vitri. Vitri is a place in France. And Rav Simcha of Vitri was a Talmud who was a student of Rashi. So he produced one of the earliest Sidurim that we have. And, you know, there in the Master Vitri, he brings the custom of saying Pirkei Avos during the summer. And he comments a little bit on the Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos. So in the Master Vitri, he writes that the reason this Mishnah was appended to the beginning of each of the Prakim of Pirkei Avos is to give us hope when we read through the chapters of Pirkei Avos. Because frankly, you go through the chapters of Pirkei Avos and it describes how you're supposed to be a good person in this way and a good person in that way, and you're supposed to have this midah and that midah. And a person comes to the end of the chapter and says, okay, forget about it. You know, it's over. I'm never going to make it. Right. So essentially, says the Master Vitri, at the beginning of each of these very demanding chapters that talks about how we have to aspire to this and aspire to that and try to raise ourselves up in this way and in that way and in the other way, first there's a disclaimer at the beginning, you know, call yourself Yeshlam Chelak L'Olam Abba. Don't get too nervous, because at the end of the day, every Jew has some portion, at least in the world to come. So, you know, you're not starting from nothing, you're starting from something. But then, you know, that will give you hopefully the courage to be able to go through the perek and say, okay, I have a portion, but I can expand my portion. I can build my portfolio by embracing this idea and that idea. But, you know, again, I should be encouraged. Whatever I'm able to do, you know, is a good thing. I shouldn't feel that if I can't achieve all of the ideals which are being put forward in Pirkei Avos, that I'm absolutely lost. There's an interesting idea which is mentioned by the Koznetzer Magid, the Avodas Yisrael, one of the great early Hasidic teachers, with regard to this Mishnah. And I'd like to take this idea from the Koznetzer Magid, build on it a little bit, relate it to something we spoke about earlier in the Shir, and then give some examples of that as a good way to get into our study of Pirkei Avos. The Koznetzer Magid asks a grammatical question on this Mishnah. Right? The Mishnah says that, again, I'll read the English translation, all Israel has a share in the world to come. Right? That's the intent of this Mishnah. Ask the Koznetzer Magid, that's not exactly what the phrase says as it appears in the Hebrew. The way to translate into Hebrew, all Israel has a share in the world to come, would be Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek Ba'olam Haba. Right? In other words, the base, in, should be the prefix before the term Olam Haba. But that's not what it says. Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek La'olam Haba. The Lamed as a prefix, as we know, means two. So literally the phrase means all of Israel has a portion to the world to come. Why does the Mishnah express it in that way? I mean, what the Mishnah is trying to say, as the English, as the Art School translation indicates, is that we all have a portion in the world to come, not to the world to come.
That means it depends on the new peace.
Oh, okay.
It only depends on the fact that anybody, any Israel,
oh, so says the Koznetzer like this. The Chelek, which the portion which is being described by the Mishnah, doesn't mean, as we often think, that when I come up to Olam Haba, I have an apartment waiting for me. Rather, what it means, a two-bedroom, right? It's very expensive. Right? Rather, what it means is that every Jew has a pathway to get to Olam Haba. Right? In other words, again, because it uses the prefix le and not be, right? It's not just that I have something waiting for me there. I have a way to get to Olam Haba. So first of all, as Rebbe Shimon Heffler points out, that puts a little bit more onus on me to not just assume that everything is going to be taken care of. It's not like I'm just going to land in Olam Haba and, you know, I check in at the desk and they say, oh yes, you know, your rooms are all prepared, right? Right, we've been waiting for you, right? It's not just, you know, and we turn down the covers and everything is just ready to go, and, you know, let us know if you want room service, right? It's not as simple as all of that, but everyone has a unique way to get to Olam Haba. Now again, we have to put in some work on our behalf, you know, but everyone has a shuttle waiting for us to take us to Olam Haba at some point, but you still have to get onto the shuttle. It's not as simple as, you know, just everything is going to be prepared. We have to put in something. But beyond that, what the Koznetzer Magid is also telling us is that if each of us has a way to Olam Haba, that could also be understood as each of us has a path to Olam Haba which is unique to us. In other words, the way that one person achieves their Olam Haba is not the same that another person, not the same way that a different person is going to achieve their Olam Haba. And everyone has to appreciate and really discover their unique way of being able to follow that path, the unique path which is theirs, in order to be able to connect to Olam Haba. This idea of uniqueness, that everyone has something unique about themselves that connects them to Olam Haba, fits in with the following idea. The great Lublina Rav, Rabbi Meir Shapira, who was famous founding Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin in Poland, and also famous for starting the whole idea of Daf Hayomi. So Rav Meir Shapira asked the following question: why are there names associated with the various ideas that are presented in Pirkei Avos? What do we mean by that? What would have been so terrible? Almost every statement that's in Pirkei Avos is associated with a particular Tana. You know, this rabbi used to say this, and this rabbi used to say that, and this rabbi used to say the other thing. What would have been so terrible, asked Rav Meir Shapira, had Pirkei Avos just consisted of the statement without the names? Right? So, for instance, to take an example, Hillel Omer, Im Ein Ani Li Mili. Right? Hillel used to say, if I'm not for myself, who's going to be for me? Why attribute that to Hillel? You know, why not just say, Im Ein Ani Li Mili? Right? Why do we have to know that it was Hillel who used to say that particular idea? It's not that Hillel said it and Shammai disagreed. Right? So why not just present it as a concept without necessarily relating it back to a particular Rav, to a particular Tana? By way of contrast, if you look throughout Mishnayos, almost always the ideas and the halachas that are presented in Mishnayos are presented anonymously, unless there's dispute. Right? So, you know, a Mishnah will present a particular idea, and if nobody argues, the Mishnah will just present that idea anonymously. It's only when you have disputes that the Mishnah will say, well, Rabbi Yehuda says this, and Rabbi Shimon says this, and Rabbi Meir says this, and Rabbi Gamliel says that. But if there's no disputes, so the concepts are presented anonymously. So answer Rabbi Meir Shapira, so why not present most of Pirkei Avos in the same way? I mean, by and large, the ideas we're going to learn are not disputed. In other words, it's not like, you know, Hillel said, Imei Ani Li Mili. And Shammai said, no, that's not true, I disagree. You know, what a terrible idea. No, I mean, these ideas are universally agreed upon. So why not present them anonymously? So said Rav Meir Shapira, the answer is that each of the Tanaim who made the statements that are recorded in Pirkei Avos not only made those statements, but lived those statements. And while, again, all of the ideas in Pirkei Avos were embraced by all of the Tanoim to some extent, there are some people who really, truly exemplify a certain approach or a certain midah in a way in which that idea becomes associated with that Tano itself.
Why would you give someone a question? Like, you give credit where credit's due in that situation. Why would someone credit saying why shouldn't we give credit?
Right. So, you know, if it's just an idea that everybody agrees with, so, okay, so Hillel happened to say it. Maybe Shammai said it also on another occasion, right? But Ramesh Shapira's point is that Hillel not only made this statement, but if you knew Hillel, this statement characterized Hillel. This described Hillel. And these Tanoim taught not only through their sayings, but through their lives. Right, to take a contemporary, near contemporary example, right, the Chafetz Chaim for all eternity will be associated with keeping people straight about Lashon Hara, right? Again, that's just now. Does that mean that there were, you know, other rabbanim didn't care about Lashon Hara? Only the Chafetz Chaim cared about Lashon Hara. No, clearly that's not true, right? But the Chafetz Chaim gave over his life, you know, to this idea of promoting proper speech. So forever, the Chafetz Chaim is going to be associated with the prohibition against Lashon Hara. In more modern times, with Scheinberg's Zatzal and the mitzvah of tzitzis are tied together, you'll excuse the pun, in a way in which, okay, other gedolim wore tzitzis also, but, you know, there's something very unique about his attachment to the mitzvah of tzitzis that, you know, you can't separate the person from his commitment to that particular ideal, to that particular mitzvah. So too, says Rav Meir Shapira, when we go through Pirkei Avos and we see that a certain Rav said this idea, rest assured that that Rav's very life spoke of that idea, and he was a role model for that idea, in addition to just, you know, saying a nice word that we can remember, you know, couching it in a very, very memorable fashion. This goes back to what we quoted before about A, the idea that the Masechta is called the Avos, both because it reveals fundamental principles, but it also introduces some of the great figures of Jewish history. They, you know, both interpretations are true simultaneously. These great Avos, through their actions, taught us Avos. These great Tanoim, through their actions, taught us these great principles because they lived these principles. Right? And as the Koshin Samagid explained, these Tanoim showed us how each of them embraced a unique path to Olam Haba. Right? And as each Tana we're going to read about exemplified a certain aspect of Torah which they made their signature aspect of Torah, something that was associated with them and is brought out through these statements in Pirkei Avos. And in that way, they exemplified not only their chelek ba'olam haba, but their chelek la'olam haba, their unique way, their unique trajectory in being able to make it to olam haba. There's a sefer that was published in 2005 called Shalmei Moshe, three volumes on Pirkei Avos, where the author, in his introduction, quotes the statement of Rav Meir Shapira that when we go through Pirkei Avos, we have to realize that each of the Tanaim not only made a statement, but lived the statement. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of congruence between the particular Tana and the particular idea which he brought out. And he brings a number of examples. So I just want to share three of those examples now because they're very, you know, illustrative to what we can gain from Pirkei Avos when we read it properly. One of the most obvious examples of where a person in Pirkei Avos makes a statement that really describes themselves is with regard to Hillel. Right? Hillel HaZaken in Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud Beis says, "Hevi mitalmidov shel Aharon." Hillel says you should be like one of the students of Aaron. Ohev shalom, rodev shalom, ohev esabrios, mekarvan latorah, loving peace, pursuing peace, loving people and bringing them close to Torah. And as we know from many, many statements, that many stories rather, that the Gemara tells about Hillel, Hillel was a person who was so patient and so easy to deal with that he showed such love to people and brought them closer to Torah in that way. He lived what he preached. He wasn't just, you know, making a nice statement and you know, and then going off on his merry way. He lived the ideals that he actually preached. To give an example, the Gemara in Shabbos tells the story of two men, a well-known story, two men made a bet with one another. Can they get Hillel angry? Right, because Hillel was known, he never got angry. No, you can never get him angry about anything. So they made a bet, you know, one said to the other, "I bet I can make Hillel angry." So Friday afternoon, Hillel's getting ready for Shabbos, he's in the bathhouse, and the guy goes into the public bathhouse and starts shouting, "Is there a Hillel here? Is there a Hillel here?" So Hillel is okay, his bathrobe, you know, comes out and says, "Yeah, I'm Hillel, can I help you?" And the fellow asked some kind of totally ridiculous question, you know, "Why do the people from this particular part of the world have flat feet?" So Hillel, instead of saying, "It's Erev Shabbos, why are you bothering me?" you know, in the bathhouse, gives them an answer. 20 minutes later, the guy comes back, "I have another important question," and he proceeds to ask about why people in this part of the world have eyes that are slanty. And again, instead of throwing the guy out of the bathhouse, you know, Hillel gives them an answer. This happens a third time, and finally the guy gets frustrated. He says, "You know, I'm trying to get you angry, and I have a lot of money riding on this. Could you just get a little bit angry if you don't mind?" And in the end of the day, Hillel tells him, "My dear son, you know, better that you should lose the 400 zuz than you should get me angry." Right? And again, through his own actions, you know, just incredible patience, where again, most of us, we know what it's like to get ready for Shabbos. Somebody calls you up on an Erev Shabbos, you know, when you're in and out of the bath, and asks you some kind of ridiculous question about, you know, something that has no relevance whatsoever. You know, so most of us would not react in quite the way that Hillel did. But again, having me Talmidim Shel Aaron, Oy Shalom Verodev Shalom, Oy Vesabrias Makarva Mataras. So Hillel really exemplified in his own life this statement. It wasn't just a bumper sticker, it was really something that characterized who Hillel himself was. The Shammai Moshe brings two other examples, again here a little bit less well known, about how certain Tanaim lived the ideals that they spoke about in Pirkei Avos. In the beginning of the sixth parak, we encounter Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So this is, again, if you want to see it, in the art scroll, page 580, sixth parak, the second Mishnah. Amir Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, b'chol yom v'yom bas kol yotzeis mehar chorei v'machreses v'omeres oy lohem labrios me'olbonos shel Torah. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, every single day a heavenly voice emanates from Mount Chorei, from Har Sinai, proclaiming and saying, woe to them, to the people, because of their insult to the Torah. As Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi stated, that, you know, our devotion to Torah is insufficient. And, you know, as it were, God complains every day about the fact that the Jewish people don't give Torah the proper respect that it deserves, that we don't give Torah study the proper attention and devotion that it really deserves. Okay, so, you know, on the surface, that's a nice statement. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is pro-Torah study. We wouldn't really expect him to say anything else, right? We'd be a little bit surprised if Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, you know, you don't have to learn so much, you know? No, I mean, it makes sense. Okay, fine. The author of the Shalmei Moshe writes, there's a story told in the Talmud Yerushalmi in Masechet Shabbos as follows. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, every Friday, would learn a little bit with his grandson. Sounds like his grandson was a young child. So he would learn a little bit with his grandson regarding the Parshas HaShavua. One Friday afternoon, he went into the bathhouse. This is a series of bathhouse stories. One Friday afternoon, he went into the bathhouse, and he remembered all of a sudden that as he's in the bathhouse getting ready for Shabbos, that he'd skipped out on this chavrusa with his grandson. So while he was still in the process of, you know, getting undressed, he threw on a bathrobe and basically had his grandson come to him, and the two of them sat and learned. And then, after he had fulfilled his obligation to sit and learn with his grandson, he went back into the bathhouse and finished his shower and is getting ready for Shabbos. So one of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's Talmidim, who saw the whole scene, said to him, you know, Rabbi, it couldn't have waited until you finished the shower. You know, you had to interrupt your shower in order to go learn with your grandson. Where's your grandson going? You know, see, so finish it. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, I don't understand. Don't you understand that when a grandfather learns with a grandson, it's like the Torah itself is being given at Har Sinai? How could I delay even a little bit in, you know, forging that Torah relationship between myself and my grandson? It couldn't wait until the shower was over. I had to take care of it right away. Comments the author of the Shalmei Moshe. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was not just a person who talked about the importance of learning Torah, and, you know, we neglect Torah, we're not as devoted to Torah as we should be, but that was his life. You know, that's he lived it. He didn't just talk the talk, he walked the walk as well. And, you know, it makes sense that he, of all people, should speak about the bas kol that would come out every day and proclaim that we're not sufficiently devoted to Torah. One last example, which the Shalmei Moshe brings, which I think is just very, very astounding when you think about it. Again, you have to think about it, but when you think about it, it is something quite astounding. In the beginning of the third parak of Pirkei Avos, it's on page 556, the third parak, the second Mishnah. Rabbi Chanina Skan HaKohanim Omer, Rabbi Chanina, the deputy Kohen Gadol, used to say, "Have a mispalo b'shlomo shel malchus." Pray for the welfare of the government, because if people did not fear it, a person would swallow his fellow alive. Alright, you should daven for the government. If we don't have a government, we have anarchy. Anarchy is a bad thing. And, you know, even if we don't like the government particularly, but a bad government is better than no government, right? And as we know, historically, the Jewish people used to pray for the Tsar in Russia. The Tsar wasn't exactly nice to Klal Yisrael, okay, but they had a certain recognition that having some government is, even a bad government is better than having anarchy, having no government whatsoever. Okay, so, it's a nice statement. What does Rabbi Chanina's Kan HaKohanim have to do with any of this? Offhand, I don't know. He was the one who happened to say that it's important to pray for the government, so be it. The Shalmei Moshe asked us to consider the following. In the art school, they translate Rabbi Chanina, the deputy Kohen Gadol. That's how they refer to him. And the author of the Shalmei Moshe points out that that's not really a literal translation of the Hebrew. Deputy Kohen Gadol would be Skan Kohen Gadol. He's not Skan Kohen Gadol, he's Skan HaKohanim. He's the deputy of the Kohanim Gedolim, plural. So the Shalmei Moshe asked us to consider for a minute, wait a minute, how do you have somebody who's a Skan Kohanim Gedolim? The Rambam writes that the way the hierarchy worked in the Beis HaMikdash was as follows. You had a Kohen Gadol, and he had a deputy, a vice Kohen Gadol, a Skan. The Skan helped him out. When the Kohen Gadol died, the Skan, the vice president, moved into the presidential seat, right? So, by definition, how is somebody a Skan of, quote-unquote, Kohanim Gedolim, of plural Kohen Gadols? Right, he was a Skan of one Kohen Gadol, but then whenever that Kohen Gadol stopped being Kohen Gadol, so Rabbi Chanina should have moved into the position of being Kohen Gadol. So what does it mean to be a Skan Kohanim? What does that terminology mean? It doesn't make any sense. So the Shalmei Moshe asked us to consider the following. The Gemara tells us that during the second Beis HaMikdash period, which is when Rabbi Chanina's Skan HaKohanim lived, we know that almost every year they had to replace the Kohen Gadol. Why? Because the Kohanim Gedolim were corrupt. They basically, in most cases, they achieved their position by paying off the Roman government. They were put there as the government appointees. And because they weren't really deserving spiritually of the position, every year, the Kohen Gadol would die. And somebody else who thought it won't happen to me paid off the Roman government, he would get the position, and year after year this just kept repeating itself. What was Rabbi Chanina? Rabbi Chanina was the perpetual Skan HaKohanim. He was the vice president for everybody's administration. He was always the number two guy. And even though when the Kohen Gadol died, the natural and normal thing would have been for Rabbi Chanina to move into the number one position, he always lost out. Why did he lose out? Because he probably wasn't politically corrected. He, lo aleinu, was a tzaddik, right, which apparently disqualified him for being Kohen Gadol under those circumstances. So the Romans kept putting in political flunkies to be the Kohen Gadol, and Rabbi Chanina just stood there and watched year after year as the position that rightfully should have been his, was denied him because he wasn't politically corrected. He was probably too much of a tzaddik for the position, and I mean he was certainly too much of a tzaddik, but that was probably a strike against him, from the point of view of the Roman government. And here, the Roman government has thwarted whatever ambitions he might have had to become Kohen Gadol. You would imagine that a person like that, says the Shalmei Moshe, would be the most bitter anti-government person that would be out there. He would be leading the revolution, because after all, he was denied his rightful place. Why? Because of politics. Politics knocked this guy out. Right? So, when a person like Rabbi Chanina Skan HaKohanim says, you should daven for the welfare of the government, no matter what the government is, because even a bad government is better than no government, he's uniquely entitled to an opinion on that matter. And it's not just somebody saying, oh yes, government is good. It's someone saying, look at me. I suffered because of politics. I suffered because of the government. I was denied the opportunity to be Kohen Gadol, probably not once, but probably multiple times over the course of my career. We should still daven for the Romans. When you put Rabbi Hanina Skara Kohanim's biography together with his statement, it gives his statement a force and a power that you can only really appreciate when it's taken against the backdrop of the things that he went through in his personal life. And the author of the Shalmei Moshe says, if you take this approach to all of the Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos, trying to fit the person, the Tana, together with the statement, we will be able to appreciate these statements of these Tanaim in ways in which the written word alone would not really do them justice. Be'ezus Hashem, as we try to, next week we'll move on to Mishnah Aleph, Perek Aleph, Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai, but as we go through, we're going to try to use that kind of approach to understand the various Mishnayos, not just the Mishnah, but the person behind the Mishnah, and to appreciate how really we learn, not only from their statements, but from the lives that they model for us as well. Wish everybody a wonderful week, and we'll see everybody next week.